Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this week's episode, we spoke with Dr. Dan Paella from the University of Colorado School of Medicine about treatment options for acute myeloid leukemia.
To start, can you just tell us about the signs and symptoms that could lead to an AML diagnosis?
Yeah, AML is really tough because the signs and symptoms can be really diffuse, really heterogeneous. The most common signs and symptoms of AML are related to low blood counts. So a person might notice that they're very fatigued or short of breath because of anemia. They might notice that they are having easy bruising or even some bleeding because of a low platelet count. They may notice that they are having more frequent or, you know, more severe infectious complications because of a low white blood cell count. But, you know, those symptoms, some of those can be very vague. So it can be very difficult to recognize.
Okay. And so how is AML diagnosed, especially if some of those symptoms are difficult to recognize?
Yeah, ultimately a bone marrow biopsy is the required way to diagnose this disease. And a person can decide that a bone marrow biopsy is necessary based on abnormalities in the blood counts. That's usually how that decision gets triggered. But ultimately, the diagnosis is made by a bone marrow biopsy.
Okay. And so after a patient is diagnosed, what goes into determining their treatment options?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot goes into this. There's a lot of new treatments that have been developed or are being developed. So it's a very different treatment landscape now than it was just even a few years ago. You know, there are different various intensities of treatment that we have for this disease. And so we really have to ascertain, you know, early on a person's suitability for intensity of therapy. You know, because the median age at diagnosis for this disease is 68, mm-hmm. most people are not great candidates for really intensive treatment approaches. And so a lot of nuance has to go into this conversation and this decision around, you know, how to approach treatment because there are so many options now.
Okay. And so speaking of options, what are some examples of treatment options that we can consider for AML patients?
Yeah, so there is intensive chemotherapy. We've been giving that for decades to patients with varying results, but there are some patients for whom that's still, you know, the best option. What we're trying to move everything toward are lower intensity therapies. And in that vein, venetoclax is probably the biggest, you know, improvement or advance made in a very long time in this disease. It's a lower intensity therapy with a very high response rate, a low side effect profile, and it's turned out to really be, you know, a huge improvement in our treatment decisions. And then we also have a lot of targeted therapies in AML. So therapies that have been specifically designed to attack a particular mutation in most cases for AML. And so if a patient has that mutation, they would be a potential candidate for one of those targeted therapies that are generally also pretty well tolerated.
Okay. And so are there any kinds of typical side effects that patients should keep their eyes on after they're receiving treatment for AML?
Yeah, and this is something that's really important to understand based on, you know, what treatment you are receiving and part of kind of before you get into treatment, having this conversation. There are lots of different side effects for all of these different potential treatments. They can be very different, some subtle, some not so subtle. It runs the gamut from, you know, infectious complications, a condition called tumor lysis syndrome, another condition called differentiation syndrome. All of those are very specific to the type of treatment that a patient is receiving.
Okay, and if they feel like they are experiencing any of these side effects, what should their next steps be?
Yeah, it's really important that a patient have a physician or a practitioner that they can call really almost at any hour of the day is what's required to really treat this disease adequately, because these things can be unpredictable, but also very treatable. And so it's really, really important to know who to call and to make sure that there's someone always available for them, you know, to deal with side effects that can arise.
Okay. And so I want to kind of shift gears to the research aspect of acute myeloid leukemia. So while we continue to develop these treatment options, why is it important for a patient to consider maybe joining a clinical trial?
Yeah, you know, all of the advances that we've made in the recent past have been through, you know, the clinical trials, and we can't learn more about this disease or make improvements unless we are able to develop new treatments. And so for the general society as a whole, it's the only way that we improve outcomes for patients with AML. But on a more personal level for a particular patient, participating in a clinical trial is a way to get a therapy that everyone has a lot of hope and promise for, but isn't yet available commercially. And so it's important resource to tap into because historically we have not been very good at treating this disease. Getting access to therapies that people are more excited about can really make an impact on an individual. But you know, and then there's also the sort of impact on the disease as a whole and making a contribution there that can be appealing.
Mm-hmm. And so can we address maybe any clinical trial misperceptions that patients might have? Like, I know sometimes we hear that a patient hears the word placebo and assumes that they're just not going to get treatment.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, it's not ethical for us to not treat a patient who wants to have treatment. And so we do have clinical trials in AML that use placebos, but they don't involve not getting any treatment. So usually that would be in the context of a new therapy that is being added to a standard of care therapy. We're trying to see if the new therapy is going to be better than the standard of care. So the way a trial like that would be run is that everyone gets the standard of care, and then a group of patients get the new treatment and a group of patients get the placebo treatment. So that's a trial design that's fairly frequent that tells us if a new therapy can be beneficial, but it doesn't prevent a patient from at least getting the standard of care. But it's important to ask these questions. Sometimes that's not an appropriate clinical trial for a patient for a variety of reasons. And, you know, maybe it's more appropriate to look for a clinical trial that's in an earlier stage of development where everybody gets the treatment in question. So those kind of clinical trials are also very common. So, you know, it's important to ask these questions and understand, but in general, no, there's no ethical way that we could run a clinical trial where a patient who wants treatment doesn't get a treatment.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so how can patients learn more about a trial or even moreover, you know, if they're eligible for one?
Yeah. So, you know, I think the first step there is to be treated at a place that has access to clinical trials. That's usually a larger institution. And those are the places that most of us would recommend a patient seek out anyway for a disease like AML, because it's a rare disease. Mm-hmm. There are benefits to being treated in a place with more experience with a rare disease. With respect to the information on clinical trials, once you're in a place that has access to clinical trials, any clinical trial that a person would consider participating in has an FDA and review board approved consent form that's written in plain English. that explains exactly what's being done and why, what are the risks, what are the potential side effects. So looking over that consent form and asking questions about it would be the best way to learn more about a clinical trial in question.
Okay, so to kind of bring it all together, what do you think patients with AML have to look forward to?
Well, I mean, you know, just if the past is any predictor of the future, you know, the stratospheric advances we've made in the last just 5 years with this disease should make everyone really optimistic and enthusiastic about the future. This field has moved so quickly with respect to improvements in therapies and outcomes that there's nothing that I can see that's slowing this process down. So I think the near future is going to be really, really hopeful. And, you know, as bad as this disease can be, it is a disease that we can cure, that we have the potential to cure. You can't say that about all cancers or many cancers. That is often the goal, can be the goal for AML. And I think, you know, as we learn more about this disease, that's going to be happening more and more frequently.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.